Welcome to The Jones Zone, a podcast by Daryl and JJ Jones, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. Your host, Daryl Jones, a top Orange County real estate agent, has been supporting homeowners for over 30 years. He is here to share his tips and advice, as well as insights from industry experts, to help you take your real estate game to the next level. Now, here's your host, Daryl Jones.
Thank you for joining us for the part three of the estate planning series. If you haven't heard already, I encourage you to listen to the part one and part two of this series, where we talk about probate protection from creditors, funding your trust, and wealth predators. Welcome, Stephanie. Thanks again. This is our third show. Wow.
Thank you for having me again.
Oh, I'm so grateful for you coming in here. The information you're providing is invaluable. I just love it. So let's go ahead and dive right in here. Now, tell me this. So we're talking again about Stephanie being an estate attorney, and I want to find out more about how estate planning can help you. Tell me more about what is a business succession plan, and why is it important to homeowners who own a business to, what should they do?
Everybody who owns a business should have some kind of a succession plan. And what that is what happens after you pass away. Do your beneficiaries inherit it? Is the company sold? Do employees of that company take it over? That planning needs to happen. Otherwise, it's just going to get left to your estate. If you don't have your trust, your business assets have to go through probate. So even your business could end up in probate.
So not only homes, businesses
not
go through
homes.
Probate as well. That must just absolutely destroy a business. I'm just guessing, but tell me more.
It does. So again, if you just have a will or you don't have a will, you're going to end up in probate. That business becomes a probate asset. So to run that, you're going to have to get authority from the court as to who can sign the checks, who can make the decisions, who can pay payroll. And that business has ongoing obligations. If they can't skip payroll, then the business is going to incur penalties. So there's things that need to happen in a business immediately. And the only way to enable that to happen is to have a business succession plan.
Business succession plans means upon death, it designates or
what happens.
What
it
exactly
tells you what
happens.
And if your business is not in a trust, the ownership of the business, your interest in that is not in your trust, and then it has to go through probate. If it is in your trust, then the trustee of your trust can follow along to whatever that business succession plan is. So for instance, the business might have a plan. The business might say, you know, when Bill dies, Joe takes over as CEO. But if that business is not in a trust, then they have to go to court to get that approved.
So we talked about this in episode two about how houses have to be, their title needs to be in the trust. So is this true with businesses too?
It is true. Your ownership interest in a business needs to be in your trust. So for instance—
But you don't have to have a certain title of a business state your trust. So let's say it's ABC Trust and you own a liquor store, and you that liquor store, the owner is known as ABC Trust, or is it Jim Henderson is the owner? Am I making any sense at all?
Yeah, no. So it would be liquor store is owned by, you know, a third of it is owned by Jim's trust. The other half is owned by Sally's trust, his partner.
Well, let's say it's just Jim.
So say it's just Jim, then the ownership interest in the business should be in his trust. If it's not, goes through probate.
Okay. And by doing that, it just has to be in the trust documents that are set aside. So for example,
that's another example of funding the trust. So it's when an individual business owner transfers or assigns their ownership interest in his business or her business or their business to their trust.
Okay. Got it. So tell us some of the common mistakes that homeowners make when it comes to estate planning. I'm sure you've got some great stories about this.
They have documents. They're not even good documents, but they've got those documents. They have something called a trust. They don't really know what it says. No one really explained it to them. And their house isn't in their trust. So
even be more specific for those that missed show two on this. You not only have to have your house in your trust, however, you do have to have the title changed.
Title
of your
needs
house.
To be transferred to your trust in order for it to keep it out of probate. Other mistakes they make is that they don't personalize their planning. They go for a one size fits all type of thing, but that's not dealing with their personal family dynamic. they might have a child that they need to leave a life estate in their personal residence so that that child always has housing. They might want one home to go to one child and another home to go to another child without the kids fighting over who gets which home.
Yeah, we talked about that before in episode 2. That was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that homeowners mistake when it comes to estate planning is that they only plan for death. So they don't do a comprehensive estate plan that not only includes the trust, but includes durable powers of attorney so that when they're incapacitated, if they had a stroke or a car accident, someone can still step up, go to their finances, pay the mortgage, pay the property taxes so that they don't lose their house. So that when they get better and they come home, they actually have a home to come home to.
Yeah, that seems slightly important.
It's hugely important. I've actually had that happen. I haven't, but a colleague of mine had a situation where their client was, this person was incapacitated. They had a stroke. They were in the hospital and then they were in a rehab facility doing physical therapy for, oh gosh, it was a long time. I think it was like 10 months or something like that. No one paid. Nobody had the authority or paid the mortgage on the house in the meantime.
Oh, wow.
Nobody paid the property taxes. So when this poor person got better and was able to go home, her home was tied up in a foreclosure proceeding. There was tax liens on the property, and the emotional drain that that took on her to work through that was just devastating to watch. And it all could have been avoided. If she had had a comprehensive estate plan, she would have had a durable power of attorney. So somebody would have been able to step up and knew they needed to step up, keep that home going, keep all those bills paid. So then when she came home, she would have just come home to her home. No problems. She can continue her getting better, continue her rehab in peace.
You know, I get a lot of questions about getting this trust. I think a lot of people may not do trust. They believe it's going to cost so much money for them. And what possibly they fail to understand is that it's actually going to cost a lot more if they don't do a trust.
It costs so much more if they don't do a trust. And it costs so much more if they don't have a good estate plan.
Right. Because if something's missed, it could make all the difference in the world.
Yeah. It's hard because I know money's tight. You know, inflation's big right now. Everybody's, you know, eggs are astronomical right now. But not doing an estate plan, if you have $1 million estate, could cost you $10,000 to $20,000 if you go through probate. Or even if you do have an estate plan, but it only has a will, you're going to spend $10,000 to $20,000 doing that. Or your family's will, your beneficiaries will. But you could have done a full estate plan with the trust before that for, you know, I don't know. Fraction of that cost, less than half, and saved all the hassle and the time and the emotion in the end.
I'm reminded of the famous saying, if you think I'm expensive, an attorney saying this, try using a lousy attorney.
Oh, it's the truth. A lot of my colleagues that do contested probate matters, which means a probate matter where people are fighting over what their assets are going to be or who gets what. They love LegalZoom. They love to kind of do it yourself. And they love the document preparers that are out there.
Right.
Who just, you know, bought a form somewhere and then you click in a few things because it's almost guaranteed that even though that there is a trust, they're going to end up getting that case in the future.
Ouch.
I don't do those. I try to avoid that.
Well, hey, you know, I've heard a lot of buzz or a lot of news on charitable organizations. Tell me, how can a homeowner use estate planning to support a charitable cause that are important to them? I'm sure there's plenty of people who pass on that don't have children or and may want to support a specific charity cause that is important to them. How does that look like? Tell me about that.
There's things you can do within a family trust, and then there's actually additional types of trusts that you can do to help charities. But you can do all kinds of stuff. For instance, I had a client who was really very involved with a charity. Their home was paid off. And what they decided to do was for a certain number of years, their trustee was instructed to rent out the house. And after all the house expenses were paid, the rest of the rent went to the charity.
Wow. Very
cool. So the charity had basically guaranteed income for however many years we put in there. And then after that time, The house ultimately, these people chose that the house ultimately went to their kids. But then what happened is both the kids and the charity benefited. So there's all kinds of neat stuff that you can do, build it in. You have to talk to somebody who is creative, but really listens to what is important to you personally, because there really is a lot you can do.
And consult, like you had mentioned in a previous episode, it would probably be best to have a team. In other words, you'd the estate attorney talking to your CPA, things yeah. of that nature.
All my clients, so I do business and estate planning, and all my clients, I always tell them, you need a team, right? I'm your lawyer. I can watch your business. I can watch your estate. We can get that done. But whatever I do has to work well with whoever's preparing your taxes, because we want that to be most efficient for you when you prepare your taxes. Your CPA has got to know about that too. Sometimes when it comes to people, when they're older, that team might expand. It might include a caregiver to a certain extent, because that caregiver is going to be able to relay what that person needs, possibly. Their doctors might say they're going to need X dollars for extra care or something like that. So the team members ebb and flow. I guess the involvement of each team members may change, maybe greater or maybe less. But clearly, you always need the attorney, the financial planner, and the CPA and tax strategist.
You know, it actually leads me to another question that I have. How does it work when, because I've had clients have this same exact situation to where an elderly person, you know, they're getting up there in age, and I don't blame them in terms of they're becoming mentally a little slow, and they're frankly not making all the right decisions, let's say, or some poor decisions. What does one do? And I don't know if this is your realm of expertise or not, but does one need to get two doctors to say, hey, they're what's it called, incapacitated? Or can you tell us a little bit about that?
There's a legal standard when somebody can't make their own financial decisions. And that bridge is usually decided by the court. You can get a conservator or a guardian of the person who can take over that for them. If you have an estate plan and it's done right, you get to pick who that conservator or guardian of you is going to be.
Before you become incapacitated.
Before that happens.
You answer that question.
You answer that question. You tell the court who you want.
So, okay. So you don't necessarily need two doctors. No.
Well, the court's going to have to be convinced that it's actually necessary to happen.
Right.
So the court is going to send out its own person to evaluate you. The person's going to submit medical evidence, et cetera. But usually, typically, if it's in a trust and everything's done properly with two different medical providers, if they certify, fill out particular questions. My questionnaires are pretty in-depth because I don't think it's something that you want to take away from someone lightly. Then you can transfer it over. If there's nothing in writing, you're definitely going to the court and the court's going to decide.
Yeah, I had a client, they've been wanting to sell their dad's home. Their mom had already been put into a rest home, and the dad was becoming very forgetful, and he was ornery. And it's funny, because I had said, you know, I can't blame him. You can't blame people for not wanting to be displaced or forced out of their home. So, I mean, there's a lot of empathy that can be there. But finally, they were able to convince him after a few things that had happened. So you're saying if that would have been in a trust, and let's say the trustee was in charge and she noticed that, gosh, my dad's really forgetting things. He got lost on the way home from the market yesterday, so on and so forth. What would that person do?
That person is going to file with the court. They're still going to have to go to court to be the conservator. But because the documents are prepared, the court's going to look to see who that person picked to be their conservator. If the documents aren't there, then the court picks. And if the court can't find someone close by, the court is just going to pick an independent person. You know, that they're qualified, but that doesn't know that person, to just go in and take over. It happened to a neighbor of mine.
Really?
So this woman lived by herself. She wasn't a client of mine, but a neighbor growing up. She lived by herself. I don't know if she ever married or not. She never had any kids. And lo and behold, one day, my dad and I come out and they're cleaning out her house. And she's there. She's in a wheelchair. There's some lady that I didn't know. She maybe recognized, maybe didn't. This lady's clearing out her house. She was appointed by the court as this woman's guardian, conservator. And she just decided that, nope, she's going to move her. She's going to sell the house. She had a estate sale before she passed away. Moved the neighbor to an assisted living facility. And it was horrifying. And her health declined dramatically once she moved. So doing all this stuff ahead of time in your estate plan, you can say, who is your conservator? You can say whether or not you want to be kept at home for as long as possible. You can decide if you want to go to assisted living as soon as possible. You get to decide all that. You can even put in things in there like if you go to assisted living, you want the trustee to have someone come in and wash your hair every week.
You know, I just heard of a story like that. I think it was one of the Kardashians, may I digress, that stated that they want makeup put on.
Yeah, I heard that. I think that they want their nails done or makeup put on or something like that. But they can do that. They can specify.
With their money, they can do that.
With their money, they can do that. But the thing is that people should be able to spend their money on themselves. So like my client who wanted her hair done every week, lo and behold, we made sure there was a hairstylist that went in, washed her hair, did her hair every week because it was really important to her.
Right.
You know, it's so those things, you earn the money.
Shoot, yeah, it's your money.
Spend it on what you want to spend it on. And, you know, your kids may or may not agree, but if it's in the document, then they can be held to that standard.
You have a lot of people that videotape their wishes to where it's possibly more effective and more definitive and exactly what the client wants done, or is that not necessary?
You know, that's interesting. Typically, we don't do that. But a couple years ago, I added on a thing to my practice, and I call it a legacy interview. Because really so much of what we accumulate in life, okay, we have our assets, we've worked hard, we've tried, we have stock or bank account or a house or two or whatever have you be. But there's a lot more to each person. There's a lot of wisdom. There are funny stories. There are family histories that just die when somebody dies. And I realize this because I really enjoy working with elderly clients who are really with it. They crack me up. I mean, the things they've seen, the stories they have. And so started doing video interviews. And so what happens is we'll ask questions and it'll be them in person. You can see them. You can hear their voice.
You ever ask who their favorite child is?
Huh? Never asked who their favorite child is. Yeah. Asked, you know, all kinds of funny things, how they met. They come up with stuff. It's just, I mean, it's not really a legal thing per se, but I think it's one of the most valuable parts of an estate plan. And it's really a kick and their kids love it.
I bet.
I mean, it's just a treasure that they have forever. And went to a funeral for one of my clients because I have been practicing that long that some of my clients are starting to pass away.
Right.
And it was really neat because they had showed a video clip on a part of the funeral. And this client wanted this joke told at his funeral. And so what a better way.
You remember
way,
the joke?
Huh? No.
Oh, sure.
Not to be repeated. Okay. But I told him what a better way than to have you tell the joke yourself.
Which would be kind of impossible.
It was really cute. I mean, yeah. It was really great. And everybody, their family really appreciated that. So, you know, that's why I say estate planning really is about your life and your legacy.
Wow. So how can homeowners ensure their heirs receive their inheritance in a way that promotes reasonable financial management?
Okay. You can leave things to your heirs outright. You can pick what ages they get it. So you don't want your 18-year-old necessarily to inherit your home outright. You might want to keep it in the trust, but let your kid live there until they get through school or something like that. So you can space out distributions. You can earmark certain things to happen at certain times. So for instance, my poor child, I did my trust when he was a baby. So I didn't know how he was going to turn out. And so for him to get assistance buying his first home, I said, if he can qualify for the loan, I'll give him 20% down payment out of the trust ahead of time.
Oh, that's not great.
So he has to be employed, I figure, because there's no way he's going to qualify if he's not employed. And I want a productive child. I don't want somebody who's just going to go through their inheritance and live on that. I want them to contribute to society.
Right.
So you can build in things like that with your trust. You can leave it in the trust for their lifetime. So it's called the Lifetime Asset Protection Trust. And since they never technically get anything in their name, then those assets aren't exposed to their creditors. Or if they get a divorce, their spouse or their ex-spouse can't get to the asset.
That's huge.
It's huge.
Wow. That's just absolutely incredible information, Stephanie. We really appreciate you joining us today for our third episode on estate planning series. Be sure to watch our first two episodes as well if you haven't heard them yet. I think you'll find them extremely useful. So thank you again, Stephanie, for joining us here for the Jones Zone. And for those of you who are listening, please subscribe or leave a review. We'd really appreciate that. And look out for next week's show. Thank you. In this last part of our estate planning series, we talked about business succession plan, the unfortunate events that can happen without an estate plan or a power of attorney, charitable giving, and conservatorship. Thank you, Stephanie, for joining us on this three-part series. The gist of this estate planning gives you peace of mind. That's for darn sure. Thank you so much, Stephanie. Stephanie, tell us, how can our listeners find you?
They can email me at stephanie@kitsislaw.com. They can call or text 949-517-2275, or they can visit my website, which is kitsislaw.com. That's KITZESLAW.com.
Fantastic. And friends, this is some exciting information. Stephanie's been so gracious. As a bonus, if you mention the Jones Zone, when you give Stephanie a call, you will receive a free family wealth planning session. That's a $750 value. So, Stephanie, thank you for doing that for us. It's very kind.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks for tuning into the Jones Zone, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. If you found this information and insights shared in today's episode valuable, be sure to head over to iTunes to rate the show. Leave a review and subscribe so that you don't miss another episode. Remember, when it comes to real estate, knowledge is power. Stay informed and stay ahead of the game with us. I'll be back next week with even more expert advice and industry insights. Don't miss it. Thank you.